Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com on the new media and home shopping network, capital of the world, St. Petersburg. Like a bad rash, Mr. Media is making his way through the entire squadron of the new NBC TV drama, Southland. Regular listeners will recall that last spring, at the end of the show's first season, Regina King, Michael Kudlitz, and Sean Hatosi all scratched their media itch right here. And now I'm delighted to welcome Michael McGrady, who plays Detective Daniel Sal Salinger. Now, before joining Southland, one of the breakthrough dramatic hits of last season, McGrady appeared opposite Taye Diggs in Daybreak and had recurring parts in Dirty Sexy Money, 24, and CSI. His film credits include Deep End of the Ocean, The Thin Red Line, Hocus Pocus, and several others. He also has a life outside of acting. McGrady, along with his wife Ilka, are co-founders of the Balanced Life Company, an international organization dedicated to helping people develop and maintain a more balanced and sustainable lifestyle. He is also an accomplished fine artist who owns and operates McGrady Fine Art with his wife. Michael, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. I hope you're not itching yet. Of course. One bad joke about itching and off you go. Hey, the last time we saw you on Southland, shots were fired and Tom Everett Scott's character was on his way to your house on the show. Goes down. Now, how much time has passed since the end of season one and the start of season two, and what kind of shape is he in, and how does it affect you?
You know, not much time has passed at all, actually. We open up the second season where we find out Tom is, in fact, in the hospital. His character is in the hospital recuperating. Meanwhile, Regina King's character is partnered up with somebody else while Tom's character of Russell is convalescing. Honestly, it affected me in a big way personally, only in that I think he's only going to be doing a few episodes. So I don't know how long Tom's going to be around in terms of the regular cast. I think that's kind of where that's going. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you. It's interesting because we are kept in the dark a lot. And maybe because for this reason, they don't want spoilers to get out. we get the scripts and we read them. And, sometimes we get them just a couple of days before we start shooting. And we're often surprised at what we're presented with as well, both for our characters and other characters on the show, too.
Hmm. Did the first season actually end a little earlier than planned? I mean, are some of the episodes from season one actually starting season two?
No, absolutely not. We were scheduled to do 7 episodes.
Okay.
And that was the idea. So, yeah, there was not any talk of doing any more than the 7.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I know sometimes when the network decides it's got a hit on its hands in the spring, it may just hold back some of those episodes and use them to get a bigger jump in the fall, and I just wasn't sure how many were shot.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on actually at the time. NBC, there was a regime, old regime was getting moved out, and a new regime was brought in, and we were kind of right in the midst of all this that was going on, so for a while there, we felt a little bit like orphans, didn't quite have a home, or we weren't sure if we were going to be around much longer. Because sometimes when certain, network heads bring in particular shows, if there's a new one that comes on board, the old one goes out along with the shows that they brought on board because everybody wants to take credit for the shows they bring on. And so we weren't quite sure what was going to happen to us. But we all felt very confident that being that it was a John Wells show, of course, John Wells' production being so successful for NBC with ER and and Third Watch and West Wing, we felt pretty confident that they certainly owed John Wells, you know, the props that they gave him, which is to, you know, let us have a chance. And I'm glad they did, because actually we're critically acclaimed and we have found a pretty decent audience actually for our show.
Well, and, you know, I remember talking to some of your castmates right around the time they were waiting to hear if the show was going to be picked up. And, of course, in addition to the change in regime at NBC, there was that other issue of 5 nights a week at 10 o'clock were being turned over to Jay Leno. So there weren't that many slots to fill with a drama series.
Yeah, that's correct. And that was something, too, that sort of, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but if I'm not mistaken, when we were brought on board, that decision had not been made yet, that they were going to strip Jay Leno at the 10 o'clock spot. So I think we were a little taken back by that as well, as were, of course, so many other shows that were hoping to, you know, get a shot at that dramatic time period. It's such a critical period, such a popular time, that I think it sort of let down a lot of people. Of course, it still remains to be seen, you know, how Jay's going to pan out and everything. And, of course, you know, he's so successful and has been for so many years. We'll just have to see if that formula is going to work at that time slot or not.
Well, of course, you know, he's going to put pressure on you guys. You're going to have to perform at 9 o'clock and bring an audience to him at 10.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. It kind of put the pressure on us, doesn't it?
Just a little.
And for now, we are a Friday night show at 9 o'clock, but, you know, I know that they pushed our premiere back to October 28th, I believe it is, a month later than we were scheduled to go on. And there's you know, pluses and minuses there. I mean, we feel it's a positive because we don't have to compete against the sudden onrush of all these new shows that come out, and then it's sort of hit and miss. Also, it gives NBC an opportunity to really promote Jay's show, because they've got a lot of money invested in that. You know, so then they give us our due respect with respect to advertising and stuff, you know, come October. To build up to our show. Right now, I know they've put a lot of money into promoting Jay's show right now. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping it's a plus for us.
Well, you know, I'm really glad that you mentioned that the show is on Fridays right now, because I'm actually looking at the Southland website on NBC, because you sent me scurrying, because I was sure that I had seen on there that it was on Wednesdays, and I'm looking at it, and it actually says season premiere Friday, October 23rd, 9 p.m., and then right below it there's a cast picture, and it says airs Wednesday, 8 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you see what we're dealing with there?
Yeah, I do. I think you guys got to get somebody paying more attention to your show immediately. Wow.
See, there you go. There's proof of what I'm talking about. We don't know 1 minute to the next what's going on with scripts or what's going on with our characters or what's going on with our show.
Holy cow.
It seems to be a surprise, you know, like a grab bag situation every day, you know.
Well, I'll say this. As a parent of a teen, it doesn't seem like an 8 o'clock show to me.
No, it's not. It's definitely not an 8 o'clock show. In fact, I think it's been re-airing at 8 o'clock over the summer.
Maybe
and, maybe that's what they're talking about. Yeah, I think that's it. They've been re-airing it on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. Of course, I've been out of the country so for most of the summer with my family, so I haven't even been watching them. But I think that's what went on. It's a pretty rugged show. I mean, there's even been talk at one point. People were saying we really belong on a cable or network, because, you know, as you know, we bleep a lot of the swearing and
yeah,
some of the questionable language and stuff, and we deal with a pretty dark material. And the way it's shot and the way it's presented, it's certainly not an 8 o'clock show. I just can't see that as being the demographic. If anything, we are definitely a 10 o'clock show, and I think 9 o'clock is a little bit of a stretch for us.
Yeah. This show would easily work on HBO or Showtime, you know, or FX. You know, it'd be great to pair it up with Rescue Me. But, of course, that's another network and another issue. How did it finally feel, and where were you when you found out that the show had been picked up for that second season?
You know, it's actually really, really exciting. I was actually at home with my wife at the time. When we found out we got picked up, we were still shooting at the time. We were still finishing out a couple of the episodes. I think it was the last episode we were finishing out, and I actually got a call from Chris Chulak, who's one of our executive producers and, of course, one of our marquee directors. He called, and he had heard the news that we got picked up. And so it was really great to hear that from him especially. He made personal phone calls to all of us. And then, of course, John, as is his manner, followed up with a phone call very soon after. to let us know that we got picked up, and we were all very excited about that. Absolutely.
And Michael, you know, I'm looking at this cast picture right now, and it just kind of hit me. You're kind of the grown up on that show.
That's a really kind way of saying that, and I appreciate you.
I don't mean anything by it.
No, that's great. That's why you're Mr. Media. I'm definitely probably by 10 years older than anybody else in the cast, as it should be. I mean, it's, you know, I'm the D3, the detective who supervises the others, and of course, I've got the older daughter and whatnot. And this year, too, as you saw in the season finale, I'm married to a woman who's my age, of course, and whatnot. And I think that's going to present some great opportunities for us in terms of drama and storyline and stuff. She's actually going to be brought on in a very significant manner that's going to disrupt my world even more. The stuff with the teenage daughter is nothing compared to what's going to come on board when the wife starts showing up.
Well, and who plays your wife on the show?
Denise Crosby.
That's right, of course.
Yeah, she's a wonderful actress, terrific individual. Just that, those few times we got to work together, there was instant chemistry, instant respect for one another's background, how long we've been in it and how long we've been doing it. You know, we're both veterans, and we just clicked right away. And, of course, she has kids, as do I, in real life, so there was a lot of stuff we totally related to when it came to the script and our storyline and stuff like that. We've had brief little meetings with Ann Bitterman, our creator and head writer on the show. She's kind of give us a little pieces of what we can look forward to. So we're both very excited about that. And every time we see a script, we are looking forward to that.
I can't believe I forgot it was Denise, because I actually watched the last episode again this afternoon, anticipating talking to you. And I remember now, and it was my wife who brought me on board watching the show last season, and I remember we were sitting there watching, and she said, hey, you know, it's one of those things where your wife is sitting, you're going, hey.
She said, right. That's Denise Only Crosby. Wife can get away with that.
Yeah, and that's Denise Crosby. I said, no, what would Denise Crosby be doing in the middle of Southland? And she said, no, look, and so, you know, I think we either, at the end, we checked the credits at the beginning or the end, and it's like, wow, that is Denise Crosby. What interesting casting.
Yeah, it is interesting casting. You know, it's they had seen a lot of people, again, as with the history of our show, they had seen a lot of different people, name people even, for each of our roles, and the same thing with a lot of the guest starring roles and the recurring roles as well. They really, John Levy does a fantastic job of casting our show. He goes out there and goes in every nook and cranny that he can for some of the smaller roles. A lot of times we use real gangbangers in our show, and we use real police officers for LAPD as well when they've got the time to do it. And, of course, because it's such a well-liked show and acclaimed and the material is so strong, we got a lot of people lined up that would be considered, you know, marquee performers that are lined up wanting to get on our show on some level. And so he's able to really capitalize on that desire and on our need to fill in all these little gaps here and there. It's a pretty populated world. It's becoming more populated as each episode, it seems like.
Well, so you're going after that Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, and Star Trek, The Next Generation crowd.
Yeah, I guess so, right? We're going to kind of run the gamut, you know. I think that's what the interesting thing is. I think all the actors bring in a particular following with them. Even some of us, I'm not as well known as maybe Regina or Ben McKenzie, but, you know, I've been doing this for over 25 years, and I certainly have a following of sorts, people that have seen me in a lot of different things, and I bring that with me. And, of course, Ben brings in a lot of people from his OC success and Regina from the feature film world. I think everybody's sort of bringing somebody to the party, and I think that's important for any show, at least getting off the ground.
I'd be curious if you know how much your character will interact with Regina's in the fall. The season ended, I mean, she's played very tough all season long, but that last episode of season one, she kicked ass. I mean, she literally and figuratively kicked ass.
Which is really a great tribute to Regina, because I got to tell you, she's very petite, very, she's the sweetest, nicest, kindest person, and she just drips with sweet. and consideration. And to see her in those scenes with that shotgun and everything was just, even for me as an actor, knowing her as a human being, as a person, I was like, wow, you go, Regina. I'm hoping to do more with her. We actually had one scene together last season. Unfortunately, they cut it out because it just, you know, it was fat and they didn't need it. And it was really great to work with Regina, and I'm hoping that we will get to do more this season. I know she does do some interacting with the gang unit this season. Like I said, we've only shot 3 episodes up to now, and they were exploring other things and storylines and stuff that didn't have us crossing paths. But I certainly hope that somebody out there at NBC is listening to this and the writers and whatnot, because I'd love to work with Regina. She's a solid actress and a really great human being.
Mm. Yeah, she was something there. And now, one of the things I've read about the second season is that there's some, I don't want to say simplification, but the complicated plot lines are apparently being streamlined a bit so that it's a little easier to follow the show. Is that right?
I don't know. It's kind of sort of mixed reviews on that. Some people didn't have any problem following the plot lines from last season, and they kind of liked it the way it was. In fact, they had heard the same rumor, and they were a little upset that they were toying with the formula. Because a lot of people liked the way we bounced around at different things and stuff. And then there's, you know, part of that camp who felt that, you know, what you just said, that maybe they needed to streamline some things. And, you know, I don't know if we've streamlined it that much more this season. Now, we haven't really changed it that much. We're making the show we set out to make from the very beginning. We may have added some new characters and maybe became a little more specific in our storyline. We're going to chase after some things that I think are going to go not so much serialized, but maybe a couple episodes, 3 episodes in and whatnot, as opposed to, you know, new things happening every show. But as far as toying too much with the formula, I don't think so. I think we're going to pretty much stick to the blueprint we started out with.
Mm. I think the thing that I noticed in the first season, which, as you say, was only 7 episodes, was because you didn't quite know everybody yet. One week there would be a focus on these 3 or 4 characters, and maybe you'd barely see these other 3 or 4 characters, and then next week it'd be all turned inside out and upside down. It was a little tough as you're trying to learn the characters and the storylines, and obviously the dialogue. It's very complex. It's not David Milt's Deadwood complex, but I mean, there's a definite thick level of what's being said.
I have to agree with you. I'm sorry. I have to agree with you on that. I mean, it was really a tough. What we were up against was very challenging because we had a fairly populated world as it was, and Anne's a very complex person who writes very complex characters, and she really wanted to introduce all of the characters right away. And when you have only 7 episodes to do that, that was a real challenge for us and for her especially. How do you introduce all these people, these complex people with these different relational, challenges and whatnot, and challenges on the job, and how do you do that in 7 episodes? You know, if you know you've got 13 to start with, you can build towards that. But when you've only got 7 and it's important to you that all the characters get covered within an hour show, which is only 40 minutes, 20 minutes for commercials, that's a tough thing to do. And I think, you know, we had to find that balance. I think we found it this year. So kind of going back to your previous question, perhaps that's where we might have streamlined it, in that we found a way to incorporate just about all of the characters in all the episodes without it being too fragmented. I know, like, for instance, my character in the pilot, I was seeing, but, you know, like a little blip. And then the second episode a little bit more, and then all of a sudden in episode 4, practically the entire episode was about, you know, Salinger losing his gun, and whatnot. And I think that kind of set, you know, like, what, huh? And they were promoting the show very much around Ben and Michael Cudlitz's character in the beginning, which is, the blue uniforms. And I think that might have possibly misled some people. They might have thought that this is all about, you know, blue uniform police officers and not so much detectives. And all of a sudden there was all this detective work going on and stuff too, and tandem with what they were doing. So I think, you know, maybe there was just some miscommunication in terms of how the thing should be promoted and how it should be run in terms of all the different characters and whatnot. But I definitely feel that if there were any bugs or kinks that needed to be worked out, I'm confident that they worked them out over the summer during the hiatus. Because, like I said, I mean, you've got some real masterminds behind this thing with John Wells and Chris Chulak, and of course Ann Bitterman, our creator writer as well. So we're feeling, as a cast, I can say that we feel very confident that any of those kind of issues that we too might have had questions about have been worked out in the second season.
Well, and it seemed, I'm glad you mentioned that, the episode where Sal loses his gun. I mean, I actually think that was the episode where the show kind of got its footing, because everyone, as I recall, everyone had a part to play there in the bigger scheme of things, and it just all seemed to kind of come together like the previous episodes had not in some ways.
Well, I kind of appreciate that, actually. Now, we kind of felt the same way. I talked to a few people about that very issue, and they felt that there was a nice balance being done there. Of course, there were some complainers that, they just want to focus on the blue uniforms for the most part, and they complained that, there was too much on the detective side and whatnot. But for the most part, the majority of people liked the balance that was struck there. And I particularly enjoyed doing it because hadn't done much up to that point, and all of a sudden I had this really great episode, and I'd been looking forward to it since reading the script, which I think we were finishing up script episode number two when we got the script before, and I was really excited about it. There's some fun stuff to do, and I knew by then, okay, finally Salinger's going to get introduced, and people are going to know who this guy is and why he's significant in this show. Because the first two or three episodes really didn't address that, and of course I had a lot of fun working on that show as well. I think for actors too, just to sort of to piggyback on that comment, is that for us it's those kinds of scenes where we're not just solving crimes or we're not just chasing down the hair follicle of the month or whatever. we're actually showing real life slices of real life where. We are juggling life between, the mundane, common, everyday stuff that we deal with at home, which has, presents its own drama, but then having to deal with these very, very real life and death issues on our jobs as well. And how do you mix and match those two worlds? My world dealing with my 15-and-a-half-year-old or 16-year-old daughter, it looks so banal and trite, but yet it's not. If you're a father and you have kids, their concern or their safety or their well-being is very much on your mind. Your family's well-being is very much on your mind 24/7. Now you got to go somewhere and deal with a triple homicide or a suicide or some kind of a life-death situation. And so you have all this stuff going on all the time. Now, how do you deal with this triple homicide and what you just witnessed there, where there was a young person involved, perhaps shot, killed, murdered, whatever? Now you got to go home. And we think, well, we see so much of that on TV. I think sometimes we get sort of callous to the realities that there are people out there that really do this stuff. They're EMTs, doctors, there's detectives and police officers seem to some of the most horrendous things on a daily basis. Somehow they got to come home and live a normal life with some of these images and visions and experiences deep, embedded deeply into their memory. Not as easy as I think we might think it is, just because we see it on TV and they go about their lives and as it's scripted, but real life's not scripted like that. It's not as clean as that.
Well, I would have to say that being a parent of a teen, and if I lived in the Southland part of L.A., seeing what your character sees, I would be thinking it's time to move to Mayberry.
Yeah. If Mayberry exists, right?
Right.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, since we started doing a lot of research for the show, and of course we did a lot of ride-alongs with a lot of police officers and detectives, I've actually gotten to know a detective very well. His name is Dwayne Fields, D.W. Fields. He's over at Hollenbeck Division, and he's been a D3 for years. And he and I have had some very close, intimate conversations about some of the things he's experienced and witnessed. And ever since I've had this training through this show, I have to admit I've become a little bit more like Sal with my kids, because I got a 16-year-old daughter and a 21-year-old. They like to drive together into some of these clubs in L.A. and in Hollywood and stuff. And now I'm like, hey, make sure the car is filled up. I want you home before midnight.
Yeah.
I've got this litany of things. They look at me and they go, Dad, you're like the guy on TV sometimes. I mean, you didn't used to be like this. I go, yeah, but I was ignorant back then. I've been enlightened. It's not as safe out there as you think it is.
Oh, man. Well, Michael, before we run out of time, I as you mentioned, you guys actually do get to cuss on Southland, even though it's bleeped for American television. And I've asked each of your co-stars who've come on with me, do you have a favorite line of profanity-filled dialogue you've gotten to say? Because you can say it here.
Oh, I can? Really?
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. Even in the reading sometimes, I don't know why, but for some reason, the word fuck just seems to always come out of Sal's mouth, you know. It's like, fuck, you know. It's in there. It's in there quite a bit. And then, of course, every once in a while, I get caught up in it, and I'm throwing it out there on a rate like it's the word but or and or the, you know. So I have to admit, I think the word fuck is the one that I use the most, and I'm very prolific at it.
And sometimes I bet something like that is a little harder to turn off when you walk out the door of work each day than other things might be.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. In fact, when I come home, I have to repeat really sound sentences to myself over and over and over so I don't bring it home with me.
Man. Well, listen, folks, you can catch Southland on its new night. Fridays, starting October 23rd, 9 p.m. on NBC, and you can catch up on episodes you missed, particularly if you missed the first season, go watch it on Hulu.com, H-U-L-U. You can watch the whole season there at a sitting. Michael, this was great fun. You're a wonderful guest. We love the show, and hope maybe later in the season we'll get you back here to talk about what's going on then.
I'd love to do it. Thank you so much for having me on, and keep watching. Enjoy it.
We will. We will. Take care of yourself.
Have yourself a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye. And for more great TV star interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with other stars of Southland, as well as the stars of Friday Night Lights, The Secret Life of the American Teenager, Chuck, Psych, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, MediaFly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. I always appreciate when you give a piece of your day and spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.